Happy Ooh. Belated birthday.
Oh, it's happy my birthday.
Yeah, you turned 48? 49.
Plus 10.
43. 40
First one
something.
Plus 10. I'm actually 58, which is unbelievable. You guys are like, what are you guys, like 15 each? 15? 17?
Give 14, or take.
Thank you very much.
Oh, 58. I can't believe it. I can't believe I've gotten this far. I can't believe I'm 58. I feel like I'm 15.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I really feel like I'm 15, and, you know, like, I don't have a wife, per se, like, you know, the strict rules of having a wife or kids, and so I still feel like I'm 17. It's like, it doesn't matter. People are like, how could you, like, willy-nilly spend money? I'm like, I don't have kids in college. I have nothing. I could just do what I want. And there's a certain sense of freedom. It's also, I don't know. It's just crazy. I just can't believe I'm this old. That's yeah. bottom line, regardless of what I just
congrats,
said.
Congrats on making it this far.
Oh, thank you. And then also I have to shout out my homies, Derek and Jocko. Their birthdays are the 6th and the 7th. I'm the 3rd.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So those guys, yeah. Today is the 7th. Today is Derek. And yesterday was Jocko. Jocko turned 40. Talk about getting old. Jocko, sorry, brother. It's all downhill.
Did not know that. I'm going to have to text him.
The roller coaster stopped clicking. Did you hear it in the middle of the night? Yeah, that's it.
Cool. Well, did you do anything for your birthday? I don't think you ever really do anything big, do you?
No. Rachel's great. She said just tinker all day because I have the new machine. So I'm tinkering, learning. I got a new Aeon laser, 130-watt big laser. It's crazy. It's got all types of innovations on it. So I was loading that up on my came on my birthday. I was offloading that, and then I have my new plasma table, which I'm trying to figure out. It's all new software and all new drawing tools. I'm trying to figure that out. It's a learning curve, but I'm getting it. And so I just tinkered all day long, and Rachel made dinner for us, and we had a nice time. And then Friday night, that was Thursday night. Then Friday night, the Blackthorn here had a blacksmithing event. So there was a few people in town. My buddy Will came over, and we had a couple of other friends came by. Justin Mabey was here with his girlfriend, and we hung out. We hung out in the kitchen. It was like a, you guys haven't been here, but it was a good East Durham hang, which is like a typical springtime summer hang in the house with everyone just hanging out in the kitchen, getting drunk. It was fun. I don't drink, but everybody else does. But it was nice. It was nice. They had birthday. Somebody got me the, it might have been Will or Rachel thought of the idea of getting me a cookie puss from Carvel. Which if.
A what?
For me, a cookie puss ice cream cake for all the old Howard Stern heads out there. Oh. So it was a joke.
That and Beastie Boy fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cookie Puss was the first Beastie Boy single, yeah.
Yeah. Cookie Puss.
Never heard that.
Growing up in New York, Carvel is a New York institution, Carvel ice cream. And they have a few standardized cakes that were designed in 1950, and they just keep going, which are these silly, stupid branded things. And one of them is Cookie Puss because its eyeballs are made out of cookies. So it's Cookie Puss. You can get it for St. Patrick's Day or birthdays or whatever. So it was a joke. They got me a Cookie Puss. So, yeah, it was cool. It was really cool. And then I went over to the blacksmithing event. That was fun. I'm a little behind on videos. I'm currently editing up the sewer cap video, which starts out as a carbide 3D CNC assembly video, and then it ends up at the casting event. I'm going to get a few videos out of that casting event that I went to, but the first one's going to be, I'm going to try maybe publish tonight. And then tomorrow we go to, well, by the time people hear this, we'll have already been in Altoona, Pennsylvania for Carolina Shoes, me and the TV show crew, Derek. Everyone's coming except for Patrick. Paul, Graz, Justine, me and Derek. We're going to go hang out, and Andy Berkey will be there as well. And by the time you hear this, it will have happened. So I hope it went well.
Cool.
That's it. Yeah, so tomorrow we're driving to Pennsylvania to go do a factory tour and then the fan meetup the next couple of days. Yeah.
Awesome. And how's the giant plasma table?
Oh, it's good. It's a little buggy only because I just don't really understand Mach 3 software. And I'm just going through it, and I'm just, you know, with every software, it's just like having a new friend. There's some things you like about them and some things you don't. But with the new software, I'm learning Mach 3. I've seen it on everybody's computers over their shoulder and then on everybody's videos. I've never had Mach 3 before, but I know it's a blanket program for those that aren't in the know that's used for a lot of different things, mostly CNCs and plasma tables. But I've never had it, so I'm learning that. And then learning the intricate ins and outs of troubleshooting a whole new software. So today I'm going to spend some time on the phone with customer support. There's a couple things I'm sure it's user error, but once in a while I get perfect cuts and once in a while the torch dives or whatever, but that's just settings that I don't know where they are.
Yeah.
So that's really all it is. So I got to get on the phone and talk to them.
Mach 3 and Mach 4 both are they're definitely the type of software that you can tell was made by a software person who's never actually used the software. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they have the history of, I know how to write software to control a CNC, and I know the math, and I can do the thing in my head and whatever, but they don't use it, because otherwise they would realize, like, it's just not laid out in a way that has any UX, UI design, anything.
It's funny, I was talking to the tech person getting over the first issue, which was, again, my problem. He gave me, you got to click this and switch that. Oh, now it works. And he said they're in the process of redeveloping the whole user interface and hiding things that people just don't need to know about.
Yeah.
And then adding some things. And one thing I said, and this is a little issue if anybody has Mach 3, it doesn't seem like, and he said you can't, but I said, is that something you can add since you're going to revamp it? I don't know if they can. But scaling something, if you're in the middle of a cut with the G-code on certain plasma tables, you could take a cut that you've already had the G-code loaded for and change the scale in X, Y, or X, and Y. So you could take a knife and fit it into the last piece of 1095 you have and make it fill the space by making it longer in X. And then do a dry run, make sure it fits, and then hit cut. And so the previous one you made is your original drawing, and the second one you made is now stretched in X. Or Y, or both. And that's one thing that apparently Mach 3 doesn't have. And I said, is that something you should be able to add? He's like, I'll bring it up to the software developers. Because that would be great. Because as a plasma user, that was a perfect example when we did the knife class. The teacher had a knife design that a lot of people wanted, and I made it big for this guy because he wanted a big one. I made it small for that guy because he wanted a small one. And then we stretched it like a sword on another piece of material. And that was just all done without having to go back to the drawing program in a matter of seconds, just making some choices on the interface. So that's something I would hope to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And spring cleanup never ends. And today the pool table, I believe, is getting picked up. It's going to Ohio to type on. So the pool table that I made, we played once. And then during Maker Camp, I made sure the table was like available for everybody to play, like
to set their drinks makers, on.
100 makers walk through and like grab the ball and like bounced it off of the thing. Not one person played it. It's just funny. You'd think like we're makers. We want to play games. We just want to look at touch tools. We don't want to make
things. Yeah. Right.
So it's been my workstation for the Cadillac, which Cadillac has been on pause, but it doesn't mean it's not moving along. We're breaking down the parts car, getting parts off it. And working on the graveyard house. There's been a lot of work at the graveyard house, even though I haven't really shown much of it. But the video is getting close to being ready to be put together. That's what I do. I get to certain milestones, and then I put the video together.
Yeah.
So everything's moving behind the scenes. Just also a lot of trips this year. This spring.
And you're getting older, so it makes all that stuff harder. Just want to point that out. Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, see those new robots like Festool and some of these companies are making that help you lift stuff?
Oh, yeah. You get a Duresta Exo suit that you can wear.
I need it for my legs because every time if I get down on my knees to do something, I have to like look around and look for something stable that I could pull myself up on. Mm-hmm. That's getting tough.
Yeah.
See, the problem is you're getting older, getting weaker, but the tools you are getting bigger. You're making bigger projects.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But that's what I'm up to.
Yeah. Cool. David, what have you been doing?
I think last month or maybe 5 weeks ago, I realized that my Trotec laser, the glass laser tube, froze and broke, which was kind of devastating. And Trotec is one of those companies where you just can't go and buy the parts. You actually have to call somebody and then they write up a estimate and send it to you. I don't know why you can't just, yeah, I don't want to talk to people. So I hopped on one of the Facebook Trotec forums and it was just to try to see what the price would be without actually talking to somebody. And it was going to be thousands of dollars for a new glass tube. And I realized like they don't make the tube. Another company makes the tube. So I took a photo of it and then realized like, oh, I can get the glass tube on Amazon. There's a company that makes the exact glass tube. It was still $1,000, but I replaced that and I didn't know how difficult or hard it was going to be. I don't like fixing things, but it was just it's held on by a couple of little clamps and then there's a positive and negative lead on the tube. And it was like 10 minutes and I was up and running again. So, a good lesson learned over the winter that you have to have enough antifreeze in the water coolant. Otherwise it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Did you not have any or not enough?
So what had happened was the real story. I mean, this is totally my fault, but the lasers, they have water that cools the system. And I've had this laser for a couple of years. I've never paid any attention to how much water was in the chiller, I think is what it's called. And when I looked in there during the middle of winter, I'm like, oh, you know what? This is in the Kelly's garage and it's not heated. So I should put some antifreeze in there. And I looked in and the water level had gone way down over a couple of years. It evaporated or whatever. I'm like, oh, I'll just fill the extra space with laser coolant. You can get antifreeze on Amazon. And so I did that. And so really had no idea how much antifreeze to water ratio I actually had in there, but it turns out it wasn't enough. And it froze. And then during the thawing, it broke. What's that?
Remember the laser you gave me, the very first full spectrum, the metal one?
Yeah.
The metal desktop one. That's what happened to me in that one. And that's how my relationship started with them, because you gave me that. And then it froze that first winter. I didn't know that you needed to put antifreeze in it.
Yeah.
And then I reached out to them for a new tube. And then they're like, oh, you want a better machine? I was like, okay. That's how.
Yeah, So recently, I also ruined my little honeycomb table, and so it wasn't level anymore. And I'm like, well, I'll see if I can get a new one. And you go to the website, and you can't just order a new honeycomb table. So I call, and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for a replacement table. And they're like, what's your email address? We'll send you a quote. Like, are you kidding me? Why can't I just order the freaking thing?
Yeah.
And so a few minutes later, I get a quote for $500 for a new table. I'm like, no, thank you. I'll figure it out. I'll make my own or whatever. But I don't know why certain companies, and Trotec makes a very good machine. It's an amazing machine, but I don't know why there's this barrier or why they have to have access to the customer to do this stuff. But like recently I noticed that Stepcraft, who makes the CNC that I have, you can't just order a CNC. You have to go and get a quote now, or you have them contact you. And I don't want that interaction. I just want to order.
There's gotta be some business reason why there's that middle process, not a middleman, like another company. It's probably not like a wholesale resale type, you know, drip down thing. But there's got to be some business reason why they don't just do direct sales of parts. And I would think, unless maybe they are the middleman, maybe they are just sourcing parts from other places and they have variable pricing. And so that when you want to order something, they have to go see how much it's going to cost them and come back to you. Maybe it's something like that. I don't know. That
maybe is weird. So. Maybe. Yeah. So, So I fixed that. That is up and running, and we're good there. I learned a lesson. Next winter, more antifreeze, and then
bring them inside. This week that's what they say in the winter, you know, so that your animals and your lasers are not too cold outside.
Bring them inside. It's like putting a Chevy in your living room.
So this week we're doing a quick little fun project. A couple weeks ago, I made a video about 10 kind of creative hacks to get better at design. And that was like the kickoff video. And then there's going to be 10 videos where I'm going to go into each one of those points and make a dedicated video on that. And so the first one is make something intentionally ugly. And so that's what I'm doing. So that's what I'm doing this week. So there's a poster that I have available with these 10 design challenges. And so I got the poster and now I'm going to make a frame for it, but I'm going to try to make a super ugly frame. And the thought is like breaking design rules so you understand the design rules and making something intentionally ugly. There's going to be lessons in there on, you know, breaking rules. And I think the outcome of this picture frame is going to be kind of shocking, or it's going to grab your attention. And that's the purpose. It's just to get outside your normal creative zone and break rules. So that's what we're working on.
That's interesting to think about. As soon as you said that, I pictured you making a frame poorly, but then I realized that's probably not what you mean. And it got me just for that split second thinking about the difference between doing something poorly and doing something ugly. Because mm-hmm. you know, you can make something well and have it still be ugly, which is, I assume, what you're planning to do. But
yeah,
rather than just making a crappy frame, you know, like you can a bad frame. But
So the thought is, so the poster that I'm framing is 16x20, and so it's vertical, but I'm going to have the frame cockeyed. So, and then the poster will fit into that, and then we're going to do some unconventional joinery, and I have like the first part of the video kind of figured out, and then I'm going to let the rest just kind of go with the flow and try to make it intentionally ugly.
Interesting. So
hopefully it's as striking, visually striking as I kind of imagine it in my head.
Well, you can always paint it if it's not striking.
You can always
enough.
Paint it. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
It's cool. Well, We were on spring break this week. That's why we didn't record last week. We had spring break and, you know, we started thinking, my kids are in high school and middle school. And so we started thinking about the fact that we don't have many spring breaks left with everybody at home, which is like super weird to think about. And so kind of last minute, within the last couple of weeks before, Jenny really started pushing, like wanting to take a trip far away. I like to plan ahead. So for me, like if we haven't made the plan a few weeks in advance, like it's too late. We're just not, you know, let's find something else to do local or whatever. She was really, I want to go to a national park. We're going to go to a national park. And so we started looking at all these national parks, and it was like, you know, to fly six people to anywhere is really expensive, plus staying and eating and all this type of stuff. And so we ended up, we found tickets through Allegiant. Have you guys ever flown Allegiant?
No.
So Allegiant's one of the cheaper airlines. There's a bunch of those, like Spirit, and there's different like cheap airlines. And Allegiant does one-way flights from certain cities on certain days of the week. And so it's different. If you fly out of Nashville, Louisville, Cincinnati, they have different endpoints in different days, right? So we were like looking at those kind of three around us and trying to see where they would end up. Anyway, we found relatively inexpensive flights from Cincinnati to Phoenix. And so she wanted to go to Sedona. And so we drove 2 hours to Cincinnati and then flew to Phoenix and then drove two and a half hours to Sedona. So it was a really long travel day there and back for sure. Mm. But we got into Sedona and we drove in the dark. Have you guys ever been out there?
I've been. It's incredible.
No.
I've been there a couple times. It's really nice.
It's Mars. It is so weird looking.
Like being on the surface of another planet.
And we drove in at night, so we didn't see the transition from like desert cactus, whatever, to red everything. We just woke up the next morning in this awesome Airbnb that we found.
And it was red.
Look out, and I mean, the place we were staying was such a great location. Every big picture windows, and every window had a giant red mound, just, you know, 100 yards that way. And it looks mile like that way.
Wile E. Coyote.
It really does. Yeah.
That's really Archer's, but in general, it looks same color.
Yeah. It was wild. So we weren't there for that long. We got in on, I don't know, Saturday, and then we left on Wednesday. So we had, you know, three solid days of hikes. And so we went to Grand Canyon one day, which was driving a couple more hours, kind of saw the canyon, did some hiking there, and then came back. And that is just, and people have told me this before, but it is really hard to describe the Grand Canyon. And we only saw one little section of it. You know, there's, you can go to all different parts and you can go down in it and whatever. And we didn't hike all the way down. We hiked about maybe a third of the way down or something.
Yeah.
But your eyes just can't really.
It's like looking at a painting. It's like looking
Parrish
painting while you're there. It's crazy.
Yeah, your eyes can't figure out how much distance you're seeing and all the different levels that you're seeing at one time. And you can't focus on all of it, so you kind of have to focus out and then in, you know,
One thing I always think of when I'm there, well, I've been there a couple of times, the one thing I always think of is if you could imagine what it was like somebody on horseback riding through the desert, and then suddenly they came across an edge, they're like, can't go any further, there's a 2-mile-wide crack in the earth.
There's this giant hole. I thought about the same thing. And all the places that we went to Devil's Bridge, which was, I actually like Devil's Bridge a little bit more than Grand Canyon. It was a cool hike, it was a fun hike, and just ridiculous at the top. We went there, and then we went to another place I don't remember the name of, down to a river, and like kids jumped off rocks and swam in the river and stuff. And the whole time, you know, in all these different places, looking around, I've never really been in the West, so that's one point of reference. I've been to California a bunch of times, and I've never been anywhere from like California to St. Louis, basically. And all these places that we were going, just walking around looking at them, I was thinking just that, Jimmy. Like, what if you were the first person to come across this?
Lewis and Clark, whoever found it for the first time.
Or what if you were a person, like a native that was born here in this just desolate, crazy looking place, and you thought the entire world was this? You know, like if you
grew
up,
the opposite effect of, you know, West Europeans finding it for the first time.
Right.
Opposite effect of,
if you grew up in the desert, you know, and survived around all these rocks and everything, and then somehow ended up, let's go east and let's look, there's trees, everything is green. Like, what in the world is this? How weird that would be, because it's such a unique, in my experience, limited experience, it was such a unique atmosphere to be in. Like, it just, all the plants, all the animals, the sun, the air, everything was different than where I live. So it was really cool. We had a great time with the kids. Some, you know, lots of beautiful scenery and hiking and memories. And it was really cool. So
yeah, it's such a great landscape out there.
Yeah. And we definitely want to go back. We have some friends in Phoenix that we got to meet up with. And we hadn't seen them, and we lived in Savannah when they did. They left Savannah before we did, so we haven't seen them in probably 9 or 10 years. And that was really awesome. I had a great time seeing them, and it was a really good trip. But we got back here Wednesday, and then as we were flying in, storms were starting to happen here, and we missed the storms. We flew in safely and fine and everything, but as we were driving back from Cincinnati, we're driving into the storms. And it started raining Wednesday night and then stopped raining. Yesterday was Sunday. Yesterday night. It has been just torrential, just nonstop. And luckily my house is kind of high. It's on like the highest point in the neighborhood. So like we don't have any problem with water in our house, but my parents live down the street, and just their basement has been flooded just nonstop. And we've been over there, and then some friends had some water last night, but and even that has been annoying, and we stayed up all night bailing water one night and stuff. But nobody lost anything. But around us in the state and in Tennessee and in other parts of this kind of area, I mean, like, people are dying and people are being washed away. Like, a kid got washed away at the bus stop the other day. Like, it's crazy. And we don't have it that bad here, so I'm very thankful for that. But the last few days have been a little bit crazy in this whole area with all of the rain and everything. So I haven't gotten a whole lot of work done for those two reasons. I was gone, and then we've been, you know, just trying to stay above water here. But I did start working on the next project, which, did I tell you about the edge banding thing that I was going to make? I don't remember the last thing. I guess not, probably not, because we didn't record last week. So I made my king size bed a couple weeks ago, and it was all plywood. And that was just the most recent of the miles and miles and miles of edge banding that I've put on in my lifetime. And when I was making the bed, I was cutting out a whole bunch of pieces of edge banding the same size. You know, it was like the drawer, all the drawers were the same size. So it was like the sides are the same, the tops are the same. So I was cutting and measuring just over and over. And the whole time I'm like, this should be a machine. This should be a machine. So this week I'm making an edge banding dispenser with a keypad, a little, if you can, I don't know if the camera should see that. But anyway, Arduino powered stepper motor, keypad, and you feed in edge banding on one side, and then you type in the length that you want and hit go.
Oh, my goodness.
And it goes, and then you just snip it off. And you send it again, and it goes,
what?
Snip it off.
It's like the old school packing mailroom things. Where you push
Yep.
That's cool.
So, as of now, it's working. I mean, I don't have it all. I haven't actually tried to push anything through it, but the electronics are all good. It have a little like tiny screen on it that shows you the distance that you're typing in, and a little stepper motor that turns a wheel that's going to like feed the stuff through, and 3D printed case and everything. And I originally was going to make it like a big, like a plate with all of this contraption on it, so that you could have an area where you could kind of drop in a big spool of the stuff, because when you unwrap edge banding, it's like a slinky. It just like, or like a, it's like a bandsaw blade is what it is.
Yeah. It's supposed to go straight.
Yeah. So I was trying to contain it, but then I realized that I was then going to have this big thing I had to store. So I switched gears to now it's a 3D printed self-contained box that you just plug into the wall, and then you just kind of feed the edge banding into the side of it. So I don't have to, it's like a thing I can take around to different parts of the shop and stuff. So I don't know if that's is that a product? Anybody else want that?
I mean, it might be. It just might be. One of my favorite tools of all time is my electronic tape dispenser. It's like this big, and you can put in a roll of masking tape. And I use a lot of tape for clamps and edge banding and whatnot. And you can type in how long you want the piece to be, and you hit the button and it spits out that piece and cuts it, and you just grab it. And so I can tape up things quickly.
I need one of those.
It's, oh my God.
Jimmy's going to have it by the end of the day.
Yeah.
I just ordered it.
It is the most luxurious tool I have in the shop. And it's just, you know, it's a little $125 tool, but it's like $125 well spent. It has already saved me so much time. It's actually, it's kind of fun to use, and people comment about it all the time saying, what the heck is that? I have probably made my money back just on affiliate links from people clicking the link. And yeah.
Wow.
And I saw Adam Savage use it, and I was like, man, this, I have to have this for the shop. And it is just, it's so, so fun to use.
I have seen you use that before. I didn't think about it until you just brought it up, but that's pretty crazy. I don't think I use enough tape to justify one of those, but maybe I do. Certainly use a lot of edge banding. That's for sure. So that's what I've been working on. That machine is in progress, trying to finish that up. Also, the X-Tool laser welder CNC combo thing that I've been talking about came in right before we left. It finally showed up. There was a shipping delay, and it finally showed up. I got it put together and hooked up, and the CNC is big. I mean, it's a 2x2 bed, but the contraption itself is like pretty large. It was really cool though. So I've never seen this put together this way, and maybe it's not new to that type of machine, but it came on a pallet, and this, the CNC enclosure is probably, it's about the size of a pallet. Let's just say it's those outer dimensions of a pallet, right? And so it was on the pallet, and the top of it was probably 3 feet off the ground. Okay. So think of a mass that large. When you unwrap it, man, excuse me. When you unwrap it, it's got, these like sockets in the bottom corner, and it comes with a, like an Allen wrench, like a long Allen key, big thick thing. And so basically the entire machine is on a scissor lift around the bottom. And so you stick this key in the side and you start cranking, and the whole machine just like lifts up, and then it's 5 feet tall. Like, so the entire bottom half, or maybe even more, of the height is empty. It's just scissors up to get the right height, and then it has side panels that you put on, and it locks presentation. It
together. That's cool.
It was very cool, and it makes it so that, you know, you could put it on a tabletop maybe instead of doing all that, but it's all put together. It's a nice big steel, super well made. I don't have any X-Tool tools before this, so I don't, you know, have a point of reference for their build quality, but super well made, super heavy duty, big closed in steel box now on casters with feet and all that type of stuff. But it was really interesting to see the size that it came and then the size that it ended up being without a lot of construction. You know, you didn't have to lift anything or anything like that. Anyway, so I got all that put together and then went to try to test out the laser right before I left. And I got it all turned on, and then as soon as it turned on, I saw the menus and everything, and I didn't have time to do it, so I turned it off. And then when I turned it back on, it was giving me this error that was like, make sure there's a ground cable attached. I'm like, what? You know, there's a ground cable attached. Turns out there's a firmware update that needed to happen, and it wasn't a big deal. But the people I'm dealing with for that are in China. And so it was like, hey, I need the firmware upgrade. 12 hours later, okay, here's the firmware upgrade. 12 hours later, I get to try it. I'm like, no, sorry, I said the wrong thing. This is the one that I need. 12 hours later. You know, so it's like been this really big delay, and they've been super helpful. And they finally sent me, while I was gone, sent me everything I needed. And yesterday I got it updated, ready to test. All that to say, I still haven't tested it yet.
I still haven't tested it.
But that's today. That's in between stuff today. I'm going to go in there and actually try to weld something. So I'm pretty excited about that. And then once I get to test the welder and the cleaner, I'm like, I have to test it all here, but then I have to take it all out to the farm because the first real project with it is working on the Ghia. So then I have to take it out there and get it all set back up and powered and all that type of stuff. But anyway, testing first.
You have all the right electrical out there?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a 220 setup for welder and everything out there already. And this one takes, I think it just requires a 20 amp, 220 or maybe 30 amp. I don't remember, but I had what I needed here, and I'm pretty sure I have the same thing out there.
Gotcha. Do you know what exactly you're going to do for your first project?
Yeah, so the Ghia, you're on mute, Jimmy. I don't know if you're...
Yeah, I just took it off.
yeah, the first thing is I'm going to kind of jump into the back end of the Ghia. That's the next body section, is cutting out that whole back end bottom half and replacing it with new panels, which I have. Mm. And so it's a lot more... There's a little bit of body work on the side that has to be smooth, but most of it is replacing structural stuff on the inside, right? So it's going to be a combo of having to care what the welds look like and take my time with those body seams and just get it welded together so that it's going to be strong. So I think I'll get to test. I'm really excited about being able to tack with the laser where it's like low heat and everything. And I don't think I'm going to have to do as many tacks for an outer body seam. Because with that thin metal, you have to like do attack, move down a few inches, do another one, move down a few inches. And you do that across the line, and then you have to cool the entire thing. And then you do it again. And it just takes forever. So I don't think I'll have to do as much.
I was going to say, I reached out to Aeon and I asked them if they had a similar package because I'm working with them. And they said they do, and it'll be available in the middle of the summer. It seems like everybody's jockeying. Cool. Even Lincoln Electric is working on something. So everybody's jockeying for that new position in the tool market.
All that means is that the price is going to come way down real soon, absolutely, which is going to be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that there are not a lot of video tutorials or videos examples of people using laser welding to work on a car, because the technology is probably fairly new, or it's just been crazy expensive.
It's been expensive. There, I found a few. Welding.com, that guy Bo, that he does a podcast over there. I found a video of him learning how to use one by somebody who had already used it. So it was like this is how quickly you can learn how to use a laser welder. It was pretty quick. But, you know, it's obviously a different machine. This is a brand new machine that nobody really has been making videos about yet. So it's not the same one. But I think there are several about laser welding in general. Maybe not body work. I don't really know. But I saw one the other day, and it was, I don't remember what company it was or whatever, but it was a real-time side-by-side comparison of, I think it was stainless. They had these two, like, 12-inch or 18-inch long seams that they had. There was two guys who were both welding. One had a TIG welder and one had a laser welder. And it was like a timer on the screen. It was like, go. And they both started on one end, and the laser welder guy finished in like 43 seconds or something, some number like that. And the TIG guy took another 4 or 5 minutes to do the exact same thing. And the laser welder just like got done, turned around and walked off. And you could see him like, what do I do now? He's like walking around in the background, just kind of like acting mic like drop. He's looking stuff. And no, he wasn't even, he was like, I don't know what to do with myself while we're still filming this video. It was really funny. So, Jimmy, you're muted again. What'd you say?
Oh, no, no. I said that's going to be interesting to watch the technology improve and change in the next couple of years. It's amazing when you think we've plateaued on a certain technology, and then suddenly there's a huge breakthrough like these laser welders. When we first started seeing them a few years ago, everybody thought that it was magic and that it wasn't real. I remember asking a welder friend of mine, I was like, is this real? He's like, I'm not quite sure. He didn't really know how to understand. He didn't know what to understand. He didn't. When you see that tip just go and lay down a perfect bead of weld, and now it's accessible to the average man and woman.
Yeah. So I'm excited about trying it out. I hope it works like it's supposed to work. I'm excited about the cleaning too, which I think was one of those things that a few years ago everybody was like, wait a minute, is this legit? You know, because you see these videos of like cleaning off the surface with the laser, and I mean, it supposedly works. One video I did see this is kind of an interesting thing. This guy was cleaning. He had painted on a piece of metal different colors of paint. And he was showing that by cleaning, trying to get that paint off, the laser obviously is reflecting off the surface. And so the color of the paint affects how well it can like vaporize the stuff. So I think things that were white and yellow were much harder to get off with the laser welder than, you know, greens and blacks and stuff like that. Now, luckily, in the case of, you know, car stuff where you're trying to clean off rust and gunk, you know, things around chassis and everything, that stuff's all going to be dark and dirty and gross. And so that should clean off pretty well. And that's really what I'm looking at. I'm going to just degrease, surface clean as much as I can, and then go in and see if I can just get down to bare metal. So,
just to clarify for people who have no idea what this is, this it looks like a futuristic gun from the Jetsons. It welds and it cuts, so it's like it does those two things depending on what setting you have. Do you know if it can also do metal engraving, kind of like what Jimmy's fiber laser does?
They haven't mentioned that. I would assume it could, because I mean, you have like feeds and speeds just like any other, you know, laser. and CNC. So I would imagine that you could cut the, you know, the power down enough and the speed high enough that you could do some engraving, but I don't know. I haven't seen anything about that yet. So, yep. I will test it out when I get there for sure. Yeah. Well, we don't really have a topic or anything today. Has there anything been going on? Anything on your mind or anything?
Well, I talked a little bit. I don't know if it's a whole topic, but it's just my opinion about something. Maybe I'm going to editorialize for about 3 minutes and then maybe if you guys could add to it. But these last couple of weeks, I've been speaking to a couple of friends that have made commitments to jobs, and then they're in the job and then they don't like the job. And then they want to go back and renegotiate. Now, this is a small scale, could be just one particular commission, or it could be a commitment to a regular job. But it seems to be, maybe it's a generational thing. I was taught by my dad, you take a commission, you do it. Regardless of what happens from when you start to what happens at the end, you do the best you can. You're committed to it. But what it seems like lately is a lot of people will take a commission for, say, $1,000. And then they're in it and they realize they're starting to lose money. And now they don't want to do it anymore. Or they want to go back and renegotiate. Or they want to, they're like, well, I'm losing money now. And I've been there. But I also look at the grander picture. I look at the whole year's worth of work. And sometimes when you have those jobs where you realize immediately you're going to lose money on it and you're really going to school on that one. But there are jobs where suddenly you realize I'm done and I'm owed $10,000. I'm done in one day. You don't go back and tell them I'm going to lower the price. So the point I'm making is that sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But as long as you win more often than you lose on these commissions, you're good. And you don't want to lose ever. But if you lose once or twice or three times in a year versus 40 commissions, 50 commissions, I think you're doing okay. But what I notice is, like I said, it could be a generational thing because it's always people that are much younger than me go, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm like, well, you're in it now. You got to finish it. You started it. They're expecting it. Put on your big boy pants and finish it and take it as a lesson learned. Next time they hire you to do this, you got to charge more. Or you got to predetermine the price of materials. Or you got to predetermine the availability of materials. But I always say, if you manage the client's expectations, even if it's bad, they'll always respect you. It's when you hide the outcome until it's too late. And then all of a sudden you look stupid. And then you're backpedaling and making false and hollow excuses as to what happened. Could be telling the truth, but it sounds too late and sounds too stupid. Whereas if you're in it and you're like, you know what? I don't love, like for instance, I just made these beer bar carts and I'm a little self-conscious because they had this image of a wheel in the CGI and the only ones I've been able to find that fit that image are plastic. So I bought them and they looked ugly and I painted them and they looked a little better. But I stepped back and I looked at them like they look horrible, but it fits the image that they wanted. And then I got on the phone with my contact and I was like, I hate these wheels. And I sent him a picture. I was like, I found these other wheels that are regular bicycle spoke wheels. And they're like, oh, that's okay. I'm like, okay, cool. So I bought the other ones. But I sent, when I shipped the two bar carts, I shipped them with the other wheels too. So they got the wheels that cost me $400, which are ugly. And I gave them the wheels that cost me $500, which are metal, but are bicycle spokes. So they can make their choice. I lost a little profit on that, but it was just a decision I wanted to make because I just thought it looked better, felt better. But these are the type of things where you just got to manage your client's expectations. And if you find that you're in it and you're losing really bad, just say, I'm going to college on this one. And that's it. And just see yourself through it. Do the best you can and be out of it. But I realize when people start, when somebody realizes, now I am actually paying to do this job, that's when they lose their steam, they lose their interest. But meanwhile, the client's over there going, boy, I can't wait to see the finished results. And it's like this whole experience has become cavitated by your upset and anger. But the idea of just seeing yourself through it without having to go back and negotiate, because then you'll never get a job from them again if it matters. Maybe it doesn't matter, and that's that. But to go back and renegotiate something in the middle of it, it is... For the most part,
that pricing thing and finding the right price where you know you've got enough cushion, and you know, I think that's always been tough for me. I've not done a whole lot of commission work over the years, but I've got a good friend right now who owns a lot of property around here and has a lot of tenants. And he asked me to make some just like fixtures and stuff for the building and for his different buildings. And I plan on doing it, but I have not been in a hurry to give him a quote for it for that very reason. It's like, I don't really want to give you a quote that's astronomical where I know I'm covering my butt. You know what I mean? Cost wise. Because I know him and I don't, it's got to be realistic or I'm not going to do it. But then if you undercut that, or if you go to where like, this is the number that would just barely make it worth it, there's a pretty good chance that, like you're saying, something's going to go wrong. It's going to take longer. You're going to break a piece of material or a bit or whatever. And then you, that little bit of margin that you've made is now gone. And this is not, for me, like doing work like that is not really a source of income. It's not a thing that I have to try to build up or maintain. So It doesn't need to barely be worth it for me. It definitely doesn't need to cost me money. It needs to be worth it, which means that number has to be higher than it maybe should be. And that's a thing that I don't have a lot of experience with quoting. What is an acceptable margin that's safe for me, but still reasonable for the client, you know, above the cost, I guess.
You just jogged a memory of mine. I notice a lot of people that get into making commissions, whether it's signs online or Etsy shop stuff. I notice a lot of people that are inexperienced. I don't want to say people that are bad at it, but just people that don't have enough experience in the beginning start to put their own emotions on a pricing quote. They'll say, they reached out to me to build this bookshelf. I would never pay $400 for this bookshelf. So I can't charge them more than $400 because that's what I would never pay. But you're talking to somebody that knows the experience of going to a craftsman to hire and buy something. Because they want the experience of getting something specialized. You're the type of person, you have the technology, but you would never go and have somebody else make it because you would just go either make it for yourself with a sheet of plywood, cost of $100, or you would go to IKEA because you don't have the time. But when you start emotionally attaching yourself to the price, I've told a couple of my inexperienced people that are starting, I'm like, that is $3,000 all day long. Yeah, but I would never pay. I'm like, you're not buying it. You're making it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so that's something to remember if you're out there doing that.
I really haven't dealt with this since my freelance web design days. But usually when I was in a situation where I'm like, this is taking way longer. I'm losing money. I want out of this. There wasn't enough communication up front. And that is always, it's almost 100%. Always the issue.
Yeah.
There's got to be good communication. And there has to be milestones. And you have to set these milestones at the beginning so we can say, hey, we got to make sure we're still on track. You're giving me what I need to complete the project. I'm giving you what you're expecting during this particular milestone. And, I really understood, I don't know how this relates to woodworking, but I really understood the idea of doing wireframes first, then doing a mock-up, and then actually starting to execute on the website. I used to skip the wireframe process quite a bit. And I would just like, well, let's just get into the design because that's the fun part. And so you mock up the website in Illustrator. At this time, there are better tools for this now. And then they're like, oh, well, we expected this and this. And they're like, well, I got to go back and change this whole design. And it would have been all figured out if we just did wireframes. Mm. And it's all about communication up front.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another thing that you could do, and I don't know, you can tell me if this is reasonable because you've done more of this work, Jimmy. You could quote your time and your effort and then leave kind of a variable position in that quote for material cost or for, you know, like he's saying with the milestones, you know, we're going to build to this point and then I'm going to give you the quote for the rest of the material that because the cost of the material could change or we may turn out that we need twice as much as that we thought we were going to need or whatever.
Yeah.
You can separate your effort and time and material a little bit so that there's some variation or, you know, just talk about, we're going to readdress this. Like you pay me 75% of the cost.
Yeah.
And then when we get to this point, we'll talk about what that last 25% actually needs to be. That doesn't make any sense mathematically.
Yeah, I understand. To be more like a construction type of a situation where it's like,
right.
Versus a commission on a bookcase or a table or something. But when it comes to construction on a house, God help these guys that have to build a house for somebody that where the variables are always changing. I personally have never taken that type of job, but I've worked on a crew where one of the clients, I was still at the School of Visual Arts, and I would work when available on a construction crew, and we would basically do sheetrock and studs and stuff. And I worked in this house, and this woman was always changing her mind. And my cousin was the general contractor. That's how I got the work. And I just thought to myself, well, the wall we put up yesterday, we have to take it down today. I didn't care. I had no emotional attachment to it because I was getting paid my day rate. But he was the one that had to sit there. And he just said, she wants to make changes, she's going to pay for it. I guess that's okay with me. But he had to temper his... Every day he'd come in and she'd be like, you know what? Because she was an artist who was building this house with her husband's money. And every day she said, you know what? I don't really like the door over here. Can we move it over 10 inches? And he's like, okay. So now the deadline has been moved up 3 days or 4 days or a month. The house, I've never finished that job. I went away from it before it was even half completed.
Wow.
And that was the job. I mean, I told the story somewhere sometime, but that was the job on which me and my dad and my brother were working on. And because now this woman made some changes and my dad, we had to move an I-beam. Somewhere I told the story. We had to move an I-beam and my dad said, oh, I know, I have an idea to move the I-beam. So he got a bottle jack out of his tool truck and put it on the end of a 2x4. And the 2x4 was 8 feet in the ceiling, touching the I-beam. And at the very bottom was the bottle jack. And the bottle jack was on wood and it started to tilt. And then suddenly under severe pressure, the bottle jack tilted to the side immediately. And then the 4x4, or it was on a 4x4, was pushing up. An 8-foot 4x4 smacked sideways into my father's temple. And he was out cold on the floor for about 8-10 seconds. And I said, oh, I was right there. And it was like a loud snap. And everybody in the place came to see what the noise was. And my dad was flat on his back. And then we all got around him and he opened his eyes and we stood him up and he had no idea where he was for about 30 seconds. He didn't know what was going on. He's like, why are you around me? Where are we? And the ambulance came and took him to the hospital. But everybody on the job blamed this woman for constantly making changes. But I blame my dad for being a little hasty and quick to see. He's like, I know. He was like, I know how to do this. And he ran and he was trying to prove to everybody he could move a steel beam 1 inch with levers. I was like, I know now. That's I would crazy. Have put the bottle jack at the top of the 4x4 and stood on a ladder. But my dad put the bottle jack at the bottom on a wooden floor. And I would have done it 50 different ways. I wouldn't have used the bottle jack. I would have used the screw jack. But you live and learn. I mean, I was 18 at the time. You know, my dad was probably in his 40s. Young, trying to prove to everybody knows what he's doing. Like I probably still do.
If you're quoting for this stuff, you also need to talk about how many changes are possible. Because if you're a construction crew, you have jobs lined up and maybe somebody is paying for changes, but then that delays everybody down the line. And so
of course.
You have to really make them pay, or you have to say you get one or two changes. And with all the crazy tools that we have now, I think mock-ups are so much easier to make, and maybe having some visual. You can set expectations by showing visuals.
Not to push my course, but to push my course, part of the thing that we do in the Fusion course is to point out the fact that it's a way to model something free, air quotes, free way to show somebody the end result and solve problems before you actually buy any material, cut any wood or whatever. And I think that's a huge selling point for someone. You can figure out feasibility, like physical feasibility, but also cost and all that stuff before you actually do any work. And that it still takes time to model something, and there's time in learning, but it's just like there's time in learning how to use a tool and expert, having some sort of level about your expertise around using certain tools and stuff. That's all just kind of built into your overall cost. I think one of the reasons I brought up the kind of difference in material and time was because we're having some work done, and the concrete is like, we got a quote for the thing, but the concrete cost is basically a square footage. It's like a, you know, it's just an area cost. And so that's kind of included to a point, but then if we decide to do more concrete, it's just going to be added up, and they're not going to charge us more for their labor for finishing. And I mean, the finishing is built into it, but you know, they're not going to charge more other than just the square yard, square foot, however they do that concrete cost. And I think that's probably, I think you could even still build something like that into non-construction projects, you know, into furniture projects or signs or whatever. If there's some variable piece in it, you can just point that out ahead of time and talk about how it might change or might need to be, you know, priced later in the process or something.
Yeah. So, if you become difficult, the price will change.
That's true. Yeah. That's a pretty good thing to put, you know, and the bottom of your quotes, like,
well, there's like
the percentage of addition is to the, your percentage.
I'm sure, Dave, you've seen the thing. It's a series of prices at the design center. It's like, if I design your logo, it's this much. If I take your ideas, it's this much. If you design the logo and I just work for you, it's this much. And it gets increasingly higher as they become more difficult.
Yeah. It's also a good point to say, sometimes it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have to say yes to everything, and that does suck when you know it is your living and you're counting on clients, but sometimes you have to say no if it just feels like it's going to be a difficult situation.
I told you how I handle friends and family. I just say, "Yeah, I'll do it. How much? I'll do it for free." And then I just never do it.
Great advice.
That's it. Say yes, no problem. They'll do it for nothing. And then just say, I'm really busy for the next 7 years, so you're going to have to wait.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, like, no, I'll pay you. You're like, well, I got so many things in front of you. I'm sorry.
It is really, as being a creative person, it is really, really hard to say no to friends and family. You know, it's like making websites or designing logos or whatever. Being a graphic designer, everybody thinks, "Oh, I got access to. I've got a family member. I got a cousin. I got a brother who can do this stuff." And that stuff takes time. And yeah. I don't know, it's so hard to say no. I never figured out how to say no, and so I would just do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been able to. Like, when people ask me to do stuff like that, I say, well, I'm not sure that I could make a video about that. And if I can't justify making something out of it that will pay me, then I probably can't fit it into the schedule, you know? Yeah. And I've got really gracious friends and family who understand that and don't try to pressure me to, like, make stuff for them for free and stuff like that. So I know that's not everybody's situation. But there have been a few things. Like, the... couple months ago or whatever, I made that Panacourt, the little soccer indoor thing. And the guy is my kid's coach, and he asked me to make that for him. And I was like, well, I mean, that is a weird enough thing that I've never seen before, so I could make a video about it to justify it. Otherwise, and I told him this, like, otherwise I could not justify the week or 2 weeks or whatever it is to design and build and deliver and paint and this thing. It just, even if I charged you what it would, I would charge a random person, it wouldn't be worthwhile for you. And I'm not going to do it for free because it's just too much time, you know? And he totally understood that. But because I could make a video about it, then it was just a different situation. I knew I'd make my money back with the sponsor. So any other thoughts on this stuff? Unfortunately, it's not something I have a lot of experience with, so I don't know that I have anything useful to add.
Yeah, it's been a while for me. Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess I would just, in closing, just say, realize when you're learning and realize when you're earning.
Ooh, put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, when you're learning and when you're earning.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then it's a gamble every time you work with somebody new, but you want to win many more times more often than you want to lose, but losing is part of the game.
Cool. Yeah. Just change the title to that. That's a good one. Good Jimmyism.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon that supports the show, that makes the show possible, especially our top supporters. Awesome crew that has not changed in quite a while, which is great. That is a pretty big deal. OMG Made, Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. They're awesome. But also people like Dale Hawkins. Dale Hawkins has been supporting for a very long time. We're grateful for everybody over there.
Sounds like a rock star.
Dale Hawkins. And you can, Dale and everybody else gets the after show. Everybody over there at any level gets more podcast after this podcast in a separate feed. And you can get that and support the show by going to patreon.com/makingit. Join up at any level. We are grateful and thankful.
Thank
That's Jimmy's I'm thankful noise. Weirdo. All right, you guys have anything to recommend? I had something. I got to find it.
So,
go.
Dave, you go, because I...
Sure. Yeah, there's this little unknown YouTuber named Hank Green. And
that's a weird name.
He's,
Thanks, awesome.
His main channel is the Vlogbrothers, and they go back and forth. So it's two brothers, and they take turns making videos, and the videos kind of directed towards each other. But Hank has his own channel called Hank's Channel, and it still has 2.19 million subscribers. But I really, really love his videos. He really explains things in a way that makes sense to me. And sometimes he'll cover political things that just... And he'll explain it in a way like, okay, I feel better. I feel better now. And it's rarely political, unless you consider climate change political, but... That's a whole conversation. But I don't know. After every time I watch one of his videos, I'm just like, I understand how that works now. And I was entertained, and I just feel better about the world.
Mm.
And I like feeling better about the world.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Cool. Hank's channel.
Well, I'm looking to see what I've been listening to. And just a completely silly podcast. Has anybody listened to the Pete and Sebastian show? Dave, you listen to Sebastian Maniscalco and Pete Corielli? I don't know if I talked about this before, but it's just funny. Every Tuesday, check in with the Pete and Sebastian show. It's what's interesting about it is Sebastian Maniscalco is obviously a very huge arena-style comedian, makes lots of money these days. But he started this podcast 10 or 12 years ago with Pete Corielli, who's not quite as big, but they still do the podcast together. So it's been... If you go way back when they're both just regular comedians, now Sebastian is this huge rock star comic, and what he's grown into and the lifestyle he lives now. It's just funny because they're always comparing, but in a fun, loving way. It's not like this imbalance that's controversial in any way, but it is funny. And crazy, stupid coincidence, when my brother was starting out doing comedy, Pete Corielli was working at one of the comedy clubs, so... I used to see him from time to time and got to know him because he lived in Long Island, but I haven't seen him in as many years. And now he's not a huge star, but he's out there earning money as a comedian. He's very funny on the show with the duo, Pete and Sebastian.
Cool. Mine is, I think I've talked about this guy before, Little King Goods. He does a lot of leather work. Talked about him. He put out a video that's, I think it's like a short or a reel or... I guess it's a short, it's on YouTube, but it's 4 minutes long, but it's him talking about the process. He makes these brass coins, and he laser engraves them, and then like does a... it's him walking through the process of how he makes these big brass coins, and they have like a black inlay and stuff. And it's not groundbreaking or anything. I mean, Jimmy, you probably already know how to do this exact same process, but...
Maybe not.
You
know, I don't
done.
Know how to do. I don't really know how to do 3D. I just sent you guys my hubcap coin that I made in the last couple of days.
Awesome.
Wow. Sewer cap coin. Yeah. When I was on my way out to go to the casting event, I had met up with some friends the night before for a friend's birthday. And one of the guys there, Lee, who's a friend of mine who follows what I do, he's like, "What are you doing this week?" I said, "I'm going to Mississippi to go casting." And he said right away, he goes, "You're going to make a sewer cap?" And I was like, "You just reminded me that's what exactly I wanted to do." So when I left that party, I went home and I designed this New York City sewer cap. I found a picture of one and just drew over it and then put my logo in place of the word sewer. And that's what this video is going to be of me on the Carbide 3D CNCing out this form. And then I started playing around with it. I always keep a thumb drive in my pocket. And on the thumb drive was that file, because I'm always going from my computer to CNC or this or that. So I was playing with the new Nova from Aeon, and I laser etched a little trivet about 6 inch with that, because it was in my pocket. So popped it in, turned it into a file, laser etched a little wooden one, which happens to be my Instagram reel, that last one I posted. And then yesterday I was playing with coins 2 days ago, and I was like, oh, I still have the thumb drive in my pocket. So I stuck it into the fiber laser and made it small. It's only 40 millimeters. And so I made the coin. So I was just playing around with the same graphic purely by chance. It was no big plan, but now my whole branding is about a New York City sewer cap.
Hmm.
And it's something I always wanted to do, but when I bumped into Lee that night, he reminded me that that's exactly what I wanted to do. So I went home that night, and the next day I CNC'd it, and then the day after I went to Mississippi. So the few things I was going to make in Mississippi weren't nearly as exciting as what I actually ended up making because of that accidental encounter. So thank you, Lee.
Cool. Well, this video is, I don't know if it's the same process or whatever, but it was interesting to see. And he makes good, really nice looking videos as well. The other thing is just a little nerd interest for me. They put out a trailer for the new Tron movie that comes out in October. It's the third one. And it's like everybody has those things that they really like, regardless of how popular they are or whatever. Tron is one of those things for me. And Nine Inch Nails is doing the soundtrack, and which is really cool. The last movie that Daft Punk did the whole soundtrack. And so it had this very specific kind of unifying sound that worked with the visuals. And that movie was all, the visuals were crazy, but they were all very blue and very white and very yellow. And then this one is very red, and Nine Inch Nails is doing the soundtrack. And so it's a perfect matching of sound and visual. And this trailer gave me chills. Like I was watching it and just like, I got goosebumps. I'm like, whoa. So I'm excited.
I'm a little confused about this. So I'm a 90s kid, big Nine Inch Nails fan from back in the day. And basically Nine Inch Nails, it was Trent Reznor, but there was a band, but it was basically him hiring musicians to be in Nine Inch Nails. And then as time has progressed, he's partnered with another guy named Atticus Ross, and they make music together, and they do a lot of soundtracks Trent Reznor's biggest thing is just making music for movies. And in all of these movies, it's credited as music by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. But this movie, it's saying Nine Inch Nails.
But it's still the two of them. Yeah.
It's still the two of them. So I'm wondering why they chose to use the band name instead of the name. Unless it has to go back to Daft Punk doing the previous one.
Well, and they wanted it to could
continue
be
that tradition.
It could be that. Also, I think that he's been working in the last couple of years to like rebuild Nine Inch Nails as a band and as a performing unit. But also I think just the music that I've heard that the two of them have done for soundtracks in the last few years is very different than Nine Inch Nails style. But I think they wanted the Nine Inch Nails style to match the aggression of this movie. And so
that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a guess on my part.
And now that we're talking about it, it's probably these are actual songs instead of scoring a movie.
So. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it could be.
We'll see.
It could be score in that style, which would be, I don't know. Just watch the trailer. You'll hear what it sounds.
I'm excited. I'm excited just because of the music. So
yeah, it's going to be cool. All right, cool. You guys got anything else for this week?
I'm good.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Glad to be back, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye. Love you.
And...